Bill Oakley. You might remember Bill from his previous appearance on Beta. He joined us a while back to talk about his life as a showrunner and head writer of The Simpsons and his side hustle as the Gordon Ramsay of fast food. But Bill being Bill, he's always got some other creative projects going. His latest is probably his most ambitious and audacious adventure yet, an Audible original series called Space 1969. It imagines an alternative universe in which John F. Kennedy was not assassinated. In this timeline, JFK ends the Vietnam War and is preparing to open a moon colony. Natasha Lyonne stars as a night nurse named Nancy who works on a lunar space station. Space 1969 is 5.5 hours of highly produced Oakley-esque mirth and mayhem. Bill joined us from his home in Portland, Oregon to give us the lowdown on the hijinks and how he came up with this.
It was an idea that I had. I've had this idea for at least 15 years in various forms, and not so much the idea that you see, or rather that you hear in the current version, but it's a setting, basically. A setting in which, and I'm not the first to come up with this idea, obviously, it's a setting in which John F. Kennedy survived the assassination. Part of that was inspired by that Stephen King book, 11/22/63, which deals with that exact subject.
Mm-hmm.
But I always thought it would be funny if, well, he survived, but he wasn't quite right. And that's kind of the premise of this whole, the setting that the whole series takes place in, is that John F. Kennedy survived the assassination attempt, but when he woke up, he wasn't quite the same.
How do you do? Good morning, all.
President Kennedy, could I have your autograph?
Of course. Where are you from, young man?
Dallas, Texas, sir.
Lovely city. I visited Dallas years back. Left a bit of myself there. My left eyeball, to be exact.
You're a peach. Keep fighting the good fight.
With every last ounce of my breath.
Mr. Kennedy, would you take a picture with my son?
I would be delighted.
Go on, Freddy. Stand next to him.
Would you like to go to space someday, Freddy?
You bet, sir. The moon, Mars, you name it.
We're gonna build quite an empire, aren't we? Paint the galaxy red, white, and blue?
I can't wait.
Quite a boy you have here. Make sure he's registered for selective service.
He's only 8.
His time will come.
And one of the ways in which he wasn't the same was that he decided to immediately end the war in Vietnam and spend all of America's resources expanding into space as quickly as possible. And that's where we are when we begin. Space 1969 is his inauguration day for his third term.
Yeah, so it's really kind of like, would it be fair to describe Space 1969 maybe as revisionist history, Bill Oakley style?
Sort of. It is. I mean, it's more like it's a sci-fi retro comedy, which puts it into three different niches, which is why it would never be appropriate for television, but makes a fine audiobook.
Yeah. And although it wouldn't be appropriate for television, just because, why? It would be too expensive to make it?
Yeah.
Like five and a half? Yeah.
It's also, that's the thing that is very annoying about television, and I have to say, having worked in television for 30 years, is, well, they justifiably, they always want to go for the biggest audience possible. So, in general, TV executives hate period pieces because people, you know, the average person is not that familiar with the past. And they hate and they hate sci-fi, except on the sci-fi channel. And so, like, it's a triple niche, as I said. And therefore, and this originally was at one point a television project, and it was rejected for those specific reasons, although everyone thought it was very funny. They were like, this is too smart for the audience, basically, which is why it's, you know, worked out far better as an audiobook.
Yeah. If you had to do it for TV, to riff off of Seinfeld, you weren't going to dumb it down for some mass bonehead audience.
That's the hard part. And I think it still would make a pretty fine animated show. And there have been some discussions about that. But it's still not, you know, it would be a big risk for whoever took it on. And I don't blame them. I don't like it. That's why that's one of my complaints about the TV business is the, you know, the numerous levels of gatekeepers that have these prescribed philosophies that keep certain types of things off the air.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One thing that I found particularly interesting is that most stories about space take place in the future, but Space 1969 is set in the past. Why did you want to set the story in 1969?
You know, it's an interesting confluence of things because, number one, it sets the tone. This whole thing is about the Kennedy administration, the third term of the Kennedy administration to a large extent. And part of the underpinnings of this whole thing is it's a little bit based on Star Wars. And my observation that, you know, the people, the average person living under the Empire, Emperor and Darth Vader was probably like, all right, we're part of the Empire, man. We're kicking ass. And and so, like, we were like, America. And I figured, you know, that's exactly what would happen with America. If America had a very charismatic leader like John F. Kennedy, people would definitely take a lot of liberties with their with their opinions as long as we were still doing great. And that's what's happening in this when we begin the series. The Kennedy's in his third term. He has 92% approval rating. The stock market is at a record high. Unemployment is at a record low. And part of what is part of our setting is it's a little bit of exploration of that.
How did you pitch it to Audible?
This is a weird thing. Audible only has two types of things. They have an audiobook. They have audiobooks and podcasts. And up till a few hours before this thing was released, we still couldn't figure out whether this was an audiobook or a podcast. So it's kind of both. It's really like a radio show. It's like an old-time radio show, 10 episodes of a half hour a piece. The thing, the real breakthrough was the creation of the character of Nurse Nancy, who was the star of the show. See, in all previous versions of Space 1969, that character didn't exist.
Oh,
and
wow.
That was the breakthrough. I was like, we need a person to star in this show. The person, you know, we don't want it to be all about the White House machinations of John F. Kennedy. We want it to be about the average, as I said, the average person's experience in this particular setting. And so thus I created the character of Nurse Nancy. And from 2 days into it, I was like, this has to be Natasha Lyonne.
5:02 p.m. Okay. All right. I got nearly an hour till I have to be at the infirmary. Goddamn graveyard shift. There is no graveyardier thing than working the graveyard shift in space. Maybe working in a space graveyard? Well, that'd be just my luck. All right, Barbara, Kiki, anyone? It's me, Nancy. I'm going to take a shower.
I wrote the whole thing with her in my head, with her saying every line, and we were lucky enough to actually get her. It was a remarkable occurrence.
So yeah, definitely. What would have happened if you were unable to get her?
I'm sure we would have cast someone else, but it might not have been someone with the comic chops that Natasha has. Or I might have had to rewrite every Nurse Nancy line, all 4,000 of them, to accommodate a different actress.
Yeah. I'm guessing the biggest challenge you faced was writing a story that lasts for 5 hours and 35 minutes. How did you pull that off?
It was an immense challenge. Yes, it took a lot of mapping out. You know, I wanted a story that had a number of twists and turns that would keep that would keep the listener involved and have a little bit of a cliffhanger at the end of each of the 10 episodes.
He didn't die in the hotel.
Wait, what?
He was found at the bottom of a gyroscopic stabilization shaft.
How dramatic.
Thanks. I said it that way intentionally.
And so it took a lot of construction to make that work. Also because basically when people listen to this, they'll know you're tracking three major stories in this. And so I kind of intertwined the three stories so that each one would play off one another. And then also when there was that each one of them had a cliffhanger towards the end of each episode. So it did take a lot of mapping out on a big document, over a period of weeks. And it was also, this is the longest thing I wrote this by myself. The script was 552 pages. I mean, this was a lot of work.
So what was that like, not having someone to bounce ideas off of?
It was a process that I had to muster a lot of self-discipline that I don't usually have and say, you're going to sit down and you're going to write 10 pages of script every single day until this is done. And I did it. And basically, as with a lot of writing, the hardest part is getting started. And the first 15 minutes are always like jumping into an ice cold pool. But then when you start rolling, it's a little bit easier. And honestly, writing this was not that different than writing Simpsons, which is, I'm mainly known for my work on The Simpsons, but other animated shows, because those are done almost as radio shows. The Simpsons was done almost as a radio show with the actors standing around. And it does rely on a lot of audio initially before the animators come in. And so I wrote this using the Simpsons script format. And it was very much it honestly was kind of just like writing a Simpsons script, except I had to describe stuff. Like, you couldn't rely on people to on people seeing things. So I had to, and I made a joke out of that many times in this thing, where people would be describing things that they clearly would be seeing. But I decided that's also why I needed a narrator. And without spoiling too much, the narrator is a major character in the entire series.
Yes, and the narrator, you often break the fourth wall and go kind of meta, especially with the case of the narrator, whose name I won't reveal because it sounds like you don't want us to, but he's often, he's interrupted by his wife or something, and he says, I'm narrating here. I'm not finished narrating.
I'm happy to reveal it, but we should just tell anybody who wants to listen to this, they should come back. Everyone listening now should know that the conversation is now going to go into some spoilers. So if you want to hear, if you want to be completely unspoiled, you should listen to Space 1969 and then come back and listen to the remainder of this interview.
The Liberty Bell was the hub of America's expansion into space. And
are you ready for your lunch?
I'm narrating here.
But I brought you...
Later. Can't you see I'm narrating?
How did the recording process go?
It was extremely strange because this was during the height of COVID and every single person was recorded at home. Audible had an incredibly complex system of shipping basically miniature recording studios to every actor, every one of our 70 actors, including myself. I play a role in the show, that you would set up. They had a computer that they would control remotely. They had microphones and so forth. And it was really a complex process that all happened from my part, happened here at my desk, at the desk of Thomas Mann, and at the desk of each individual or closet, as it may be, of each individual actor.
Mm. And I imagine you were coaching the actors, right? Like telling them to say, could you say it this way? Do the line a different way?
Yes. Yeah. And in some cases, I mean, I was there with Thomas throughout. Thomas did a lot of the recording. I directed the vast majority of it. And I have a lot of experience directing actors in this realm because that's been my career. But for instance, like Natasha didn't need any, she barely needed any coaching because, as I said, I wrote the lines in her voice and she knew where the jokes were and she knew how to say them. So we actually were able to record all several thousand of her lines in 2 days.
Wow. And you've said on Twitter, and you've said it in this interview, I believe, that Space 1969 is the best, funniest, and longest thing you've ever written. It's obvious. We've talked about why it's the longest thing you've ever written. But why do you think it is your best and funniest work?
Because I didn't write it to please anybody but me. That's the thing, that's the remarkable thing. It did not have to go through a development process like every other project I've ever done. And in this case, I was able to be incredibly self-indulgent, and I'm so glad that the audience has responded, because every single time I was like, I never thought, will the audience get this? I thought, do I find this funny? And that's why there's so many things that are like, they're very obscure. Many of these references are extremely obscure references to things from the 60s. I was only 2 or 3 years old when these things occurred, but I happened to be a student of that era. And there's an infinite number of references to things like the Laugh-In, which most people probably never saw and never heard of. But the amount of time and attention that went into recreating fictional scenes from Laugh-In was astonishing. And I think, as I said, the team at Audible did it so well.
And The Dating Game is another kind of would be an obscure reference.
Oh my God.
For many.
They found a guy who sounds just like Jim Lang. I listened to that. Jim Lang was the host of The Dating Game, for people who don't know. I listened to that thing 30 times because it just sounds like it really happened. And that sounds like Jim Lang, who most people don't remember. But like, to me, I was like, oh my God, it's like we have recreated things from the past that never existed.
Yeah, and his catchphrase, that, and here they are. It's uncanny how much the actor you got to do that sounds like Jim Lang. Yeah. Do you have a favorite scene in Space 1969?
That is a very tough question. I have hundreds of favorite scenes. One, and these are going to contain spoilers.
Mm-hmm.
I particularly love the scene where Richard Nixon goes to Gimbel's to buy a shirt.
I need a men's dress shirt, white. And I'm in a hurry.
Of course, sir. What,
I don't know my size.
No problem at all. May I just take your measurements?
If you must. But, what is with this, decor? This aluminum foil and what?
Oh, it's a kind of an outer space theme. Astronauts, lunar landers, and all that. To go with the inauguration. Kind of groovy, don't you think?
Yeah. Did you hear me say I'm in a hurry?
15-inch collar, 35-inch sleeve. Would you like to try it on? The dressing room is right over there.
Yes, fine, but quickly.
That's one of my favorite scenes. And it's constructed of it. The audio is absolutely brilliant.
It
there's
is.
There's a number of other scenes. Gosh. There's many scenes with Natasha that that I just keep, they're so funny. Natasha on the, Nancy on the dating game. I love the scene where she and JFK are hanging out in the White House bowling alley and bowling and smoking cigars. This is going to sound crazy to people who have not heard this, but it all comes about very naturally. Oh, and of course her, I'm not going to spoil it. Say her interactions with Richard Nixon late in the, in a different setting, late in the series, also make me laugh like crazy.
Mm-hmm. I understand that you're working on a sequel, Space 1970. What can you tell us about it?
Where did you hear about that?
I read it somewhere online.
Oh, well, I can't go into too much detail.
Okay.
At the moment, but it is Space 1972 is what it's called now.
Oh, okay.
And I have the story all worked out, and I won't go into any more detail, but I will say that at the moment, it looks like it may actually happen, which is a thrill. I haven't been so excited about any work developments in a very long time. And writing Space 1972 is going to be absolutely fantastic.
Bill Oakley, thank you very much for joining us today. Congratulations on Space 1969. Looking forward to Space 1972.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
Bill Oakley is the creator of the Audible original audiobook, Space 1969. Find out more about Bill and Space 1969 at WPR.org/beta.
Old Town Road is important for this younger generation, both as a way of kind of giving them a way to be resistant and to connect with each other.
Hootie and the Blowfish's Darius Rucker is just one story in the rich history of Black country music. Coming up, author Francesca T. Royster tells us about many more. I'm Doug Gordon. You're listening to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio.